we reached 19 million people. 550,000 of them openly acknowledged that they were for the first time open to address their mental health struggles, which is a big deal. And then at the same time, they're open to resources. Now you think that you can actually predictably, quantifiably connect with people.
Hello and welcome to episode 97 of the Mad Happy Podcast. Hard to believe this is 97. Producer Phineas here. And today I am introducing a very special episode, a conversation that Payman had with Kenneth Cole, the very well-known and successful designer and entrepreneur. They cover a lot. As two entrepreneurs at very different stages of their journeys, they speak to incorporating social impact as part of the foundation of their companies, personal stories, mental health, and so much more. This is a fascinating conversation between two people that have a lot in common, but are also at very different places. And so without further ado, the Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism. Enjoy the show with Payman and Kenneth Cole.
Today, we are joined by my new friend, Kenneth. Kenneth, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Payman.
You know, one thing we always start with is we have this Mad Happy Journal, which is a daily mental health journal, which we'll give you one when you leave. But a question in it that we ask every guest is, what is one thing that you're personally working on right now and trying to improve?
Me. That's my biggest challenge every day, is to be better and to do better, be better. Be a better executive, be a better husband, be a better parent, be a better friend. And I find that if you just accept the fact that this is all work in progress, then it's a more effective journey and a more important one.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we are all work in progresses for our whole lives, so love to hear that. For you, quickly taking it back, I mean, it's been over 40 years since you started your brand. I'm sure that you've done a lot of reflecting, but one thing that caught my eye, and I was listening to a few other podcasts you've been on just to be prepared, is that from very early on, the social impact side was a part of the brand and what you worked on. Was there a certain inspiration for that you felt like connecting your brand to social causes made sense, or how did you first decide to do that?
So that's a good question. Actually, you and I spoke briefly about how you got to where you are. I struggled a little bit at the beginning because I was relatively compulsive and obsessive about working, knowing that so few startup companies actually survive even the first year in business. So that couldn't be an option, and I needed to make sure that I brought every bit of myself to this, and that we were on target. You know, every day we reassessed where the allocation of our very critical, fragile, limited resources, human resources, financial resources, creative resources, to make sure that they were appropriately focused. So that took a lot of kind of reflection. And at the end of the day, I was asking people to bring a lot of themselves to work. And it became really clear, and also not just others, myself, that it needed to be about more than just a paycheck. And it needed to be meaningful. And the question that we ask ourselves often is what we do important? Is fashion, at the end of the day, really mean anything in people's lives? I make both arguments often, and I think it is important. I think every day you get to introduce yourself to the world on your terms. Every day you have a white canvas. But at the same time, you know, if you have anybody in your life who is struggling and you can't put food on the table, and you have COVID or you have something else, and it becomes very unimportant. So I figured if we can make what we did inherently part of something that was more meaningful in and of itself, then what we were doing would become important. So, you know, I worked on, at those times, there was this pervasive crisis in the world that nobody wanted to talk about. It was the first pandemic we had ever confronted, and it was called AIDS, HIV/AIDS, and nobody would talk about it, because if you did, you were presumed to be at risk, which meant you were part of this at-risk community and you stood to lose your friends, your jobs, your insurance. So the stigma was terrible. So I made it a point to talk about what no one was talking about. And was it smart to do? I don't know. Was it wise? I was young. I was arguably naive, and somewhat where you guys are with your business. But it changed. It had a profound impact on me, on the man and the brand and the business, and everybody, and all my associates. I think all of a sudden what we're doing felt more meaningful. And we've done that. And I've sought ways to talk to people about not just what's on their body, but what's on their mind, and not just what they stand in, but what they stand for. And I think it's made our pursuit way more meaningful and fulfilling.
Yeah, I think the first time I listened to that podcast, because I had listened to it when it first came out with Guy Raz, and it's a great episode, so congrats. But, you know, I think it was super interesting because I did make a lot of those comparisons, which is like to our brand. And when we launched and started talking about mental health as well, it was like very taboo. You know, no one was doing it. And I imagine there were some similar moments where it's like, oh, like, should we attach it to this bigger thing? Like, does that make sense? Like, we're just selling clothes at the end of the day. Like, you know, how do those two things link? I guess for you, like, when did it become clear that, like, no, like, this purpose, like, does make sense? Like, we do, of course, we want to have amazing product and all of that, but tying it to something bigger just, like, feels better and is better for not only the brand, but the business and the impact.
Quickly. Actually, you know, I think there was some people who challenged it and questioned it, but for the most part, it was almost universally embraced. And we were a small business. I didn't have a ton to lose at the time, but it became purposeful. And that's how, you know, it's been a 40-year journey. I refer actually to talk about it as a 20-year anniversary of our 20th anniversary.
Yeah.
And it makes us feel a little bit younger and more relevant. But throughout that, it's about staying relevant, and it's having point of view that's communicated and expressed in what you bring to market in the products that we sell and how we talk about them and how we relate to the universe of people that we relate to, or we want to relate to and do business with and or collaborate with.
Yeah, and how have you thought about, you know, that time piece? I mean, when I was first starting this brand, I was like, oh, 5 years feels like a long time. Now I think 10 years is like the very bare minimum you could do anything to have any sort of real lasting impact, and probably 20, 30, and 40 years is really what it takes. Like, I guess, how did you view that as an entrepreneur, as someone who, of course, like had to work in the business day in, day out, a lot of ups, a lot of downs? Like, how did that mindset grow in you as you grew up within the business?
That's a very good question. I haven't really spoken about that per se, but I internalize it all the time. And I think you got to just stay focused on the season at hand and what you're doing today, and you've got to make sure you're moving the ball forward. And on occasion, you need to take a step back to stay on course.
Yeah.
And ultimately to take two forward, hopefully. But you can't look that far down the road. You know, reflecting back on 40 years, I refuse to do it because I don't. If you spend too much time looking in the rearview mirror, then you encounter the first bump in the road, and you're not going to
get past.
You're not going to get to 41.
Yeah.
So, and I think what I feel is that our business over the years has been an extraordinary foundation to relate to more people, to build a more meaningful business and bring an ongoing more relevant product to the market that has a reason to exist in the world, which is in and of itself a difficult challenge. And there's different ways of assessing it, and what's relevant to some isn't to others, and what's relevant today may not be tomorrow. So it's what makes this business great and makes it so exciting every day. But time is the test of everything. Yeah. And can you prevent, and does it make sense to be in business this long? I don't know. Maybe it does for some, but
yeah.
But it's the road I set out on, and I stayed on it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. And for you, I guess during that journey, when was the first time that the thought of even mental health, your own mental health, or generally speaking in the population, even came to your mind? Like, what year was that, or what time period in your life? Because when I talked to my parents, it wasn't something that like they ever thought about.
Right.
And I even barely did when I was growing up.
So mental health was not part of the conversation for most of my professional life, personal and professional life. It just wasn't something you spoke about. And I don't think people had the ability, the tools to speak about it, the vocabulary to speak about it, which is part of why today we realize how important it is we speak about it, because that vocabulary didn't exist. And it's so stigmatized to the degree that it does. And to express and to share with people how you feel is in and of itself an encumbering conversation. And truthfully, my daughters, Amanda was working with me at the time, and she helped initiate in the company a NAMI initiative called Stigma Free Workplace. So because of people's inability to talk about it, and it was an easy thing to initiate, so we did. And people felt good about it. And then NAMI had asked if I would want to do work with them on a branding narrative marketing campaign, something like what I had done with HIV for a lot of years. I ran AMFAR for 14 years. I was chairman, and I was part of the board for 30. So what I work on a campaign to destigmatize mental health. So that was, then when after NAMI said that they'd be on board and they'd support it, then we said, it's just so much bigger than you guys. If we are going to go down this road, hopefully you're okay with us, you know, expanding to 10. So we then reached out to basically every large mental health service provider in the country, and they all unequivocally joined in, agreed to allow us to use our platform to bring attention to their efforts and resources. And then we aggregated all these great resources. So if you go to a mental health, you go to our Instagram, and you go to our website, you see an aggregated collection of resources that is very inspiring and meaningful. So and the goal is to bring business disciplines to this space where with leverage and scale, and where you can create, where 1 + 1 = a lot more than 2. So that's what we have set out to do.
And what about, I mean, was there a moment for you personally that made you connect to it, or was it an experience that one of your kids had, or what is that origin story in a sense?
So it's a good question. So I think it was very important to my kids, and I realized that it needed to have been more important to me. And I didn't have a mental health narrative at the time. I didn't. It wasn't how I defined myself. But I've come to understand, you know, they say that 1 in 4 people, WHO says, World Health Organization, is 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 people in this world, this is pre-COVID, are living with mental health conditions. We say it's 4 in 4. Because if it isn't you, I came to learn real quickly, it's somebody you love, somebody in the family, in the community, or in the workplace. But we are all living with mental health conditions. And, you know, one realizes, I mean, I've been in a perpetual fog since the day COVID descended upon us, and still trying to process what it all means, what the world has in store for us. We're living through a time where there's pervasive uncertainty. Everybody, and we are all in trauma. So we don't know what tomorrow has in store politically, socially, politically. We don't know if so much of what we've held to be so sacred continues to have a place in it, have an appropriate place in our lives or in the communities. And we don't know if we're going to work from home, if we're going to work, what work looks like. We don't know if our kids are going to school or what school looks like. We don't know what the political universe is going to look like. We don't know what's happening in Ukraine and what implications that's going to have. So we have what I refer to as this institutionalized uncertainty, in which basically we all inherently do well with clarity. Tell me no. The second best answer to yes is no, as they say, but maybe it is unacceptable. We're living in a world of maybes. So, and that's hard. It's hard for everybody to plan, to contextualize, to organize, to define what matters and what doesn't. As I came to really understand it, and then I started to look in the mirror more, and I really came to realize my struggles, but everybody else around me became more comfortable talking about theirs.
You bring up a good point, because I think what we've always tried to do with mental health is also just not only focus on, you know, the negative, you know, this negative connotation. Like, there are positive things to mental health. It's a whole spectrum, and we try to like focus on everything, because I think, you know, no one just wants to talk about, oh, like, these conditions or depression, you know, and it puts it in this bad light. So we've really tried to highlight everything. How do you think about, you know, with all the uncertainty in the world, like for yourself, though, you still want to be a positive, optimistic person, right? Like, how do you try to bring those types of practices into your life or how you talk or think about things?
Well, there's the man and brand. So I'm always navigating the two.
Yeah.
So we've instituted a commitment to relentless optimism is referred as the brand. And I think that's what the universe is looking for.
For sure.
I don't go there naturally, but I'm working towards it. And I don't see that light as clearly maybe as some do, but I'm very focused on creating better paths to realize more optimal outcomes. And I think that's part of why we've been effective as the coalition, showing and also working with all the tech partners. Because I do believe at the end of the day, tech world is accused of having been the cause of a lot of mental health related issues. But I make the case that they're also been in some cases, the salvation for many. During COVID, when you're isolated, they were the mechanism and the platform by which people could reach out and find support and find community. But at the end of the day, can they do more? Yes, they can do more. So our goal is to help guide, you know, understanding, you know, the pros and the cons, and at the same time, see if there is a path forward that is healthier and more encouraging for our young people specifically.
Yeah, and with the coalition, how do you think about the audience, you know, the younger audiences on social media that follow you guys, and like how to connect to them, which is very different than connecting to a tech company and helping them work on initiatives within the company or how their products are in real life? I think, you know, how have you tried to focus on that audience, if at all?
I mean, that's a critical audience today, and that they are our future. So, and how do we empower them, you know, with the tools to be effective, and how do we help them help us? How do we be there for them? So that is a conversation we're always having. And what is the narrative? What is the discourse? And I hope we're doing it well. I mean, I know we can continue to do it better, but there is a crisis of self-harm and people looking to take their lives, which is the worst case scenario. And so how do you bring tools to people? How do you enable them and encourage them and support them? And that is what we're desperately trying to do. I mean, they say 1 in 4, but the worst statistic is that 2 out of 3 of those individuals do so in the proverbial shadows. They don't
talk about it.
They don't know how to talk about it. Guys worse than women. It's not easy for guys to be vulnerable and to be empathetic. And men of color more than Caucasian, Asian men even more than men. So it's culturally, it's there are all these obstacles that aren't going to change in a day, and arguably maybe they're generational, but it takes work and effort. And I do think today these platforms enable you to reach so many people so much more meaningfully. We launched a campaign with Meta on Instagram with $300,000, which was donated, and we reached 19 million people. 550,000 of them openly, admittedly acknowledged that they were for the first time open to address their mental health struggles, and they were open to learn about other people's, which is a big deal. And then at the same time, they're open to resources. So that had not happened before. And that is very encouraging, because now you think that you can actually predictably, quantifiably connect with people, resources, and you can support them in ways that you couldn't before. And you need the analytics, and you need transparency, you need to know to the degree you're able to do what with the limited resources you have.
Yeah, and when you talk about tools, I guess, would have been the most impactful in your life?
At the end of the day, you got to figure out how to be there for yourself.
Yeah.
And I've been meditating since I was a young man, and I go away from it, and then I try to come back to it. And
me too.
And sometimes when I'm back to it, I'm not back to it the way I wish I could be, and I, you know, I can't get there to the degree I wish I could. So there's all different kinds of meditation, and I'll continue to find other tools, and music, and also obsessive work, as probably arguably maybe that's a mental health issue in and of itself, but I find it also helps me focus and deal with get outside of myself sometimes.
Yeah, and how do you think about the work you want to do, you know, for the rest of your life? Like, of course, it seems to be very social impact driven, but you still work with the brand. Like, how do you think about the next 10 years for yourself?
I don't think that far down the road.
Yeah.
And it's a great question, probably the ultimate question. And absent of a sense of where you're going, you're not likely to get there, unless, especially if you're not heading in that direction. So hopefully I can continue to be, you know, make an impact in people's lives. And I could be healthy enough to do it, and physically, mentally, emotionally, and withstand all the obstacles that we all encounter,
yeah,
every day. And I do think that most of those obstacles are self-imposed,
for sure,
and then self-enabled.
Well, thank you. A couple closing questions that we ask everyone. One is: has there been someone that's been very inspirational to you as far as their mental health journey goes, or just been through a lot and been able to tell the story that you think would be impactful to have on the show?
I've been very inspired by my kids and how they've dealt with their issues. And there are so many people, and we could probably talk about this offline. I mean, there's so many great stories, and to the degree you put out a mic, you'll find people are more inclined to step up and express themselves. And everyone has one. It took me a little while to find my story and find my voice here in this conversation, but it's very real.
Yeah, for sure. And the last question we ask everyone is, what makes you mad happy?
Well, it's probably not what I wear. And I'm not sure how you characterize mad happy specifically, but I love what you guys do. And with the little you have to do it, and you had to do it, and I love that you're staying focused on enlarging your voice and your reach, and to the degree you can do it in a way and make people feel good about who they are, has extraordinary benefits on so many levels. So I'm mad. Hopefully, I'm happier more than I'm mad, but. But to balance the two and find that middle place, I guess, is the optimal.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much for being on. I think it's inspiring, one, to have just listened to a bunch of stuff and then have you here. And of course, some time has passed since you first started, but I think a lot of those lessons still apply today. And I think we're using a lot of those things in what we're trying to do as well. So thank you for being an early inspiration in that way. And we're going to link everywhere people can find you. People, of course, can find the brand and everything with the Mental Health Coalition. And hopefully down the line, we find some cool stuff to do together with the team.
Yeah, look forward to that. Thank you, Pavement. And keep up the great work. It's so great what you guys are doing. And it's inspiring to us and everybody around you, I'm sure. So stay
thank
focused.
Thank you. We definitely will. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode. We are fast approaching episode 100. If you've been with us since the beginning, thank you so, so much. We will be back next week with another fantastic conversation on mental health. Have a great weekend. See you next week.
The Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism.